Now we're just over a month into President Trump's first term in office, first month in office. A lot has happened in the last month. Some of what's happened is surprising, some of it less so. We'll take a look at some shakeups that have happened already in the White House.
And some Republicans in Congress are hearing from their critics at raucous town hall meetings across the country. Also, while we're about a year away from the midterm elections, some legislators could be in trouble as they seek re-election.
We're joined now by Harry Enten to break down the latest news. He's a senior political writer and analyst at 538.com. Harry, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
You've been writing, watching Donald Trump's approval ratings right now, and they are at, it depends on who you look at. What are we seeing out there?
Right. It does depend on what poll you're looking at. If you look at the average poll, it's pretty clear that most voters and most adults nationwide have a lower approval rating than disapproval rating than of Donald Trump. That is, he's more unpopular than popular. But again, it does depend on the poll. Some polls have his approval rating at, say, 40%. Others of them have him near 50%. And then the average is somewhere around 45%.
And your colleague, Nate Silver, I think was the one writing about it may depend on if you're looking at polls of registered voters, likely voters, adults in general, live poll, online or automated poll. What kind of changes do we see there?
Well, essentially what we see is that the further up the chain you go, say, from going from adults to registered voters and likely voters, you see that Trump's approval rating rises a little bit, which shouldn't be too surprising, right? Because Trump tends to do poorest among minority voters and younger voters, and they tend to be registered to vote at a lower rate than, say, white voters or older voters. So Trump's approval rating among registered voters tends to be in the mid to high 40s versus with just adults, it tends to be in the low 40s. And then if you look across different modes, what you tend to see is that Trump does poorest among the polls that conduct their surveys by live interviewers. Some people suggest that's because people who might approve of Donald Trump's job don't want to tell the truth to a live interviewer. They think they are ashamed to admit that they support Donald Trump, although it could also be the fact that the live interview polls tend to get more minority voters and more younger voters. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, those are the people who tend to disapprove of Trump's job at the highest level.
You wrote about the impact of presidential approval ratings on their party in midterm elections. That's a ways off, but people are thinking about these things already. Democrats may be thinking, okay, if these trends continue, low approval ratings for the president, golden opportunity to pick up some seats. It's not that simple, you write.
It's not that simple. I mean, if you look at where Trump's approval rating is right now, on average, that would result in the Democrats picking up the necessary, I believe it's 24, 25 seats that they need to gain control of the House of Representatives. But what we know from the past is there's a wide margin of error with that. So let's say Donald Trump's approval rating is only about 40%. Well, on average, that would get the Democrats, say, 40 seats. They gain 40 seats from the Republicans. But there's the margin of error so wide that could be as low as, say, a single-digit gain for the Democrats or as high as a gain well north of 50, 60 seats. So there's a wide margin of error. So it gives Democrats an opportunity to take back the House, but it's far from a guarantee.
Right. Democrats have got to be hoping to recreate 2010 in the opposite direction, this big wave election against the party of the president and the congressional majority. What would have to happen for a wave like that, a wave of the Democrats' dreams?
Well, I think the first thing is obviously you want Donald Trump to remain unpopular, and the more unpopular he gets, the better chance there is that a wave develops. But I think one of the key things that may help out Democrats this time around is that because Donald Trump is so unpopular so early on, one of the key things we're looking at is candidate recruitment. That is, can Democrats get strong candidates to run against these Republican incumbents, and do the Republican incumbents perhaps feel like, ooh, this is going to be a bad year, so we're going to retire? And what we're already seeing is there are some signs that some Democratic representatives want to stay in the House. For instance, Hakeem Jeffries is a congressman from New York who says he's not going to run for the mayoralty of the city of New York because he wants to remain in the House, while other Republicans are perhaps seeing this and going, you know what, I don't want to run for higher office. We've already seen, for instance, Republicans saying, you know what, I want to stay put, stay where I am. So candidate recruitment, to me, is a key thing that we have to keep an eye out on.
Another thing Democrats may be wondering and Republicans worried about is, can there be a Democratic answer to the Tea Party efforts in 2010, people showing up at town hall meetings? Let's give a listen. This is happening so far. Here's a listen to a town hall meeting of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky and some constituents speaking up there.
I will shake your hand. I want to thank you for 30 years of public service, but you have to acknowledge that we got too damn many people on food stamps in Kentucky. And last I heard, we're the leader, and that is not where we want to be the leader. And the last I heard, these coal jobs are not coming back, and now these people don't have the insurance they need because they're poor. And they work those coal mines, and they're sick. The veterans are sick. The veterans are broken down. They're not getting what they need. If you can answer any of that, I'll sit down and shut up like Elizabeth Warren.
So, and that's, you know, one of the more civil feedback we've heard in some of these town hall meetings. What do you make of a lot of liberal efforts to get opposition to Republican town halls?
Well, I would say that it's certainly one way to measure enthusiasm, right? In midterm elections, turnout tends to be much lower, and enthusiasm can be a key in ensuring that your party and your party's voters show up to vote. And the energy that we're seeing at these town halls does remind me at least a little bit of the type of energy we saw in 2009 and 2010 against Democratic representatives. And that could be very key for Democrats who tend to have a midterm turnout problem, at least the past few cycles, is this type of enthusiasm could lead them and get their voters out, say, in 2018.
We're talking to Harry Enten right now, senior writer and analyst for 538.com, looking at the latest in national politics. We'll continue our conversation with Harry in just a few moments.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our weekly check-in on the latest in national politics with Harry Enten. He's a senior political writer and analyst at 538.com. Harry, a lot happens week to week so far in the early days of the Trump administration. Big news over the last week, Michael Flynn, of course, out after a couple weeks on the job as national security advisor. We had a non-taker for the role, but now we've got General H.R. McMaster agreeing to replace Flynn. What's the reaction been to his stepping up to that position?
I think the reaction has been, among most people who follow this, is relief. Obviously, the National Security Advisor is a very important position in our government, especially as, say, the shadow cabinet or kitchen cabinet has become more important in cabinet positions. The ones that are voted upon by the Senate have become kind of fallen into the background. I think most people would agree that H.R. McMaster is a very qualified applicant and certainly much more qualified than Michael Flynn was.
A lot of the reporting from behind the scenes seems to suggest that the issue is how much authority does this national security advisor have to do things like appoint their own staff to run National Security Council meetings versus people like Steve Bannon and sort of their alternate national security group. Do we know how that's played out?
Well, we know that that was part of the reason why the person in between the first initial choice of Donald Trump after Flynn stepped down didn't want the position was because he believed that, in fact, Trump would not give him the power that was necessary to run his own sort of little department there. But we do know that Trump has said that if McMaster doesn't, say, want Steve Bannon sitting in on some of these meetings, then Trump would take that belief or that want very seriously. So it does seem that McMaster may indeed have some power, but make no mistake, this is a department as is much of the Trump administration that's in somewhat disarray. So he's going to have his work cut out for him. But again, McMaster is someone who comes highly recommended and is probably someone who is up to the challenge.
Looking at Congress for a moment, there's been some talk out there. Congress had big agenda items coming in with a Republican president, Republican control of both houses, people saying not much happening, moving kind of slow. You looked back at past administrations, though, with similar situations. What do you see? How does this stack up?
Well, what we know, you know, obviously it's somewhat difficult to measure, right? There may be certain things that are in committees or had previously been in subcommittees in the House and in the Senate that, you know, at this point hadn't been passed, and maybe they were moving towards getting passed. But we know at least through late last week the number of pieces of legislation that have been passed through the Congress is about average. In fact, we just don't see this early on in the term many things getting through Congress. So the fact that Congress hasn't passed many pieces of legislation that have then been signed into law by President Trump shouldn't be too surprising. But let's wait and see over the next few weeks and months ahead. If the slow pace continues, then perhaps there should be time to worry that maybe Congress doesn't know what's going on. But at this point, far too early to panic.
Right. It takes a while to hit the ground running, even if you have big intentions at the start. It takes a while to move things through committees, through full votes and things like that, and then hand them on to the president. And this is nothing new.
This is nothing new. Keep in mind, you know, if you go back to, you know, I think the George Herbert Walker Bush administration, the George W. Bush administration, I think in the George W. Bush administration, the thing that they had only passed so far through, say, the first 4 weeks of the administration was recognizing Ronald Reagan's 90th birthday. That was the only thing that had passed and then signed by the president. So there's still plenty of time for things to get passed. But let's wait and see where we are in a few weeks and a few months. If things are still this slow in, say, June, then we may have a problem on our hands.
A month in, Harry, you and some of your colleagues at 538 had a conversation about the biggest surprises so far from the Trump presidency. What do you see as the most surprising thing so far?
We had this beautiful discussion. We have these discussions every Tuesday or Wednesday of, you know, between us. For me, the answer was that we've seen such little movement on the Affordable Care Act. We've just not seen President Obama's signature health care law that a lot of Republicans have been yelling about now for almost a decade, and we just haven't seen much movement to either repeal or replace it. There was a little movement early on, but right now it seems that Republicans are in complete disarray on it, and it doesn't seem like, number one, that they may have the votes to repeal it, and they certainly don't have the plan or the votes to replace it. And the fact that this has been on the back burner for so long and they just don't seem to have their act together, to me, was rather surprising.
And a weird thing seems to be happening in public opinion. As I understand it, for the first time, more people like the Affordable Care Act than don't like it?
That's correct. You know, this has been a bill that, or a piece of legislation that just hasn't been that popular. And if you go back over the past, I think it's 10 polls, for the first time ever, more Americans have a favorable view of Obamacare than have an unfavorable view, which may make it much more difficult to both repeal and then replace.
Briefly, Harry, the next big story you're expecting, if you can predict that?
Well, the next big story, who knows? I think we're keeping our eye on the Democratic National Committee chair race that will be decided this Saturday, and see whether the more liberal candidate, Keith Ellison, the grassroots candidate, wins, or the more establishment but still liberal candidate, Tom Perez, wins. That, I think, is going to be a key factor or key indicator of where the Democratic Party is at this point.
Thanks, Harry. Always good to talk to you.
Nice talking with you.
That's Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst at 538.com. He joined us today to give us the latest in national politics.